So, for lack of time, we're going to have to work really quickly, even though the subjects we're about to discuss really deserve a class for each and every one. What I want us to tackle now in dating is, what are we looking for? You know, are you looking for a nice girl, looking for a sweet girl? Everyone's looking for a good-looking girl. Good-looking means you're comfortable with her looks. Not that your friend thinks she's good-looking, but that you're comfortable with her looks. Comfortable means different for different people. So that, fine. But what are we really looking for as far as content, as far as chemistry? So let's begin with chemistry. Chemistry is a little undefined, meaning it's a little enigmatic. What are you going to define? So the easiest definition is that we enjoy talking to one another. And we've discussed topics of importance. People can sometimes date a girl for a half a year or a year and talk about the movies and all kinds of nonsense, and that's not what I'm talking about. But if you're going to have conversations about things that are of importance and of value, and you understand one another and you share viewpoints, even if you don't agree on everything, but you share perspectives and you can maintain good conversation throughout the dates, so that's usually a very good indication of chemistry. One of the things you want to look out for is that in the conversations, you are not being derogatory towards one another, meaning you do not want condescending remarks. You do not want a feeling that she is talking down to you, you're talking down to her. Obviously, we each have our strengths and weaknesses. We each have areas which we understand better and worse. But there still should be mutual respect. I once set up a girl with a guy. I said to her, look, I've been contemplating the shidduch for over a half a year. I don't want to set you guys up because he is so sweet and gentle and you're so energetic. I have a feeling you're going to look at his genteel and look down at him. And I see that as a strength. Any part of a person's personality that is an integral part of the personality must be valued. You can't have a situation where you're compromising on something that is an integral part of them. Obviously, we have strengths and weaknesses, and when you meet the right girl, you're still going to realize that there are certain aspects of who she is that you wish were different. She's not perfect, right? But things that are integral to who you are and who she is have to work, have to mesh. Can't be a situation like I told this girl. I'm not willing for you to go out with him. If you're going to look at this guy and his gentle and his quietness, for you will be a compromise. Yeah, I'm willing to put up with that. Then, no. This isn't right. They went out and it went good. They hit it off. I warned him. I said, I want you to look out. How does she talk? When she hears about your genteel, when she sees that you have a tendency to be non-confrontational, does she value that or does she look down at that? I warned both sides before they went out. On the third date, fifth date, I called them both up. Now they're on the verge of getting engaged. I said, stop. Don't get engaged. Do you value his genteel or are you willing to put up with it? I value it. Okay, they're happily married. They have a bunch of kids, Baruch Hashem. But I waited a half a year. I couldn't bring myself to offer the shidduch because I was scared. A shidduch can't work if pivotal points in a person's personality are viewed as, it's a compromise, I can deal with that. It has to be that you appreciate who the other person is and they appreciate who you are. When we're dating, what we're looking for is the following. We're looking to be complementary. We're looking to be able to work together. But we're also looking to be identical. There are areas in which we want to be almost identical. We want to be concentric circles. We want to have shared values. It doesn't work if you're dating a girl that says, I want to fly to Honolulu once a year. I want to go on vacation to Alaska every few years. I want to spend my time seeing the world. And you say, I believe in living in Israel. I don't go to visit my parents in Chutz Laaretz. I don't go for family simchas. Leave Israel. What are you talking about? No way. I know a couple where he was very strong about not having a TV at home. And she always had a TV running. And they got married. And you can understand that there were big explosions. Another couple where he kept saying, I want to send my kids where they'll learn the most possible Torah. I want to send my kids to Chinuch where they'll be focused and grow in Torah and have nice Divrei Torah on Shabbos. And she said, I want to send my kids to co-ed education and I want them to know what girls are like and I want them to be modern. But they didn't discuss it before the wedding. And you know what? It was a source of explosions between them. So you have to stop and ask yourself, what are my values?
What are my values? So most people will say, gee, I don't know. I believe in Judaism. And I say, okay, let's analyze a few questions. You want your wife to cover her hair or not? So you'll say yes, or you'll say no. And she'll say yes, or she'll say no. And I'll say, wait, halacha, we all know. We know she's supposed to cover her hair. So how do you come to a decision? Meaning question number one, when it comes to values, to my mind, is how do you decide? When a guy comes to me and tells me I'm dating a girl and she wants to wear pants under her skirt, is there any problem with that? I say, wait, I have two questions. How do you come to a decision about that? How does she come to a decision about that? And you understand there are girls who wear pants under their skirt and then they wear a mini. And then there are girls who wear pants under their skirt and they wear a regular length skirt. Do you have a problem if your wife wears only pants? Does she have a problem wearing only pants? Do you have a problem if your wife doesn't cover her hair? Does she have a problem not covering her hair? How did you come to that decision? I don't care about the decision as much as the methodology. I want to know that you're going to use the same methodology. One of the issues you should discuss is, who's your Rav? You know, there are all kinds of people that carry the title Rabbi. You have to decide who you're going to go by. There are many questions, and you know that if you ask different people, you're going to get different answers. So what's important to me is that your methodology works the same way. If there are points where you don't reach the same conclusions, I have to wonder why. But if you're using the same methodology, then I can understand that that's going to be workable. So that's one point. Another point is, what are your values? So you'll tell me, what do you mean? I don't know. So I say, take stories. And through the stories, you'll figure it out. For example, let's say a guy says, to my mind, it's very important to have guests. I want to do chesed. So I'll say, okay, what else is important to you? So a guy will say, it's very important to me to learn Torah. And I'll say, okay, now let's say, in order to have guests, you have to come home early, you have to do more shopping. That means you're going to lose an hour of learning. You're going to have to go help your wife with the shopping. You're going to have to prepare, help set their beds. And when they come to the Shabbos table, you're going to have to spend time with them. You won't be able to go out to your chavrusa the way you would on a regular Shabbos. Ah, so now you have to decide between your values, what are your priorities? It's important to take stories and see how they match. Because just to speak in a certain theoretical sense, this is important, that's important, I want this and I want that. Yeah, but what happens when they come into conflict? And that brings us to my famous story about two people climbing a mountain. Okay? Imagine you're going to climb a mountain. And you have a partner to your right. Your right leg is connected to their left leg. You guys can imagine that, right? You have contests like that sometimes. Each one has one leg tied to the other. And together, you have to climb the mountain. Now, you get into sync. One, two, right. You move your right, they move their left. And you climb like that. Works great. The only problem is that as you're climbing the mountain, you see rocks falling at you. Smaller rocks, bigger rocks. And that means that you have to alter course. It's not just that you're walking. As the rocks approach, you have to shift to the right or to the left. Now, if you both shift in the same direction, you're fine, you're safe. There's enough time to realize there's a rock coming, we have to shift. The problem occurs when the rock's coming down and you say, let's go left. And the other side says, let's go right. And you say, no. The right path, the correct path is to the left. And the other guy says, no, the correct path is to the right. Now, as you're arguing, the rock is approaching. That's when you start being in danger. And sometimes there are bigger rocks and sometimes smaller rocks. Well, you know what? This metaphor is a metaphor for life and marriage. You don't know before you get married what challenges will present themselves. You don't know if it will be issues of health. You don't know if it will be issues of relatives, family relationships. You don't know if it will be issues of parnasa, a livelihood. You don't know if it will be issues of contending with difficult neighbors, with a difficult community. You don't know. There are all kinds of issues that come up. Could be that the children will have learning disabilities. Could be a million things that a person has to deal with in life. And what happens when we stand up to the challenges of life is that we have to make compromises. Every challenge demands compromise. And you have to ask yourself, which compromise do I want? What's important to me? Those are my values. When I have to make a decision, where will we live? So, I know, in one place it's, I have an easier commute, but the kids won't have such a good environment to grow up in. Am I willing to make that commute every day in order for the kids to have a better environment? Am I willing to forgo a higher salary in order for the kids to have a better environment? Where do my values lie? Meaning, if we're trying to figure out if the girl and the boy match, what we're really trying to figure out is, do we have shared values and priorities? Now, priorities is the key, because you want to know that when you have to make those compromises that life demands, you will make the same compromises. As you climb that mountain, you don't want to reach a point where you're pulling in opposite directions. It's not nice when a couple enters a situation that the wife says, look, the kids need more room, the kids need more space, I want you to take another job. And you say, I don't mind taking another job, but that means I won't be home for supper. It means I won't be home for lunch. It means I won't be home for breakfast. It means the only time I'll see the kids is on Shabbos, and I'll come into Shabbos wiped. So then family life has gone, and all I have left is to work to feed everyone else, but I'm out of the family. And she says, you have a point, I'll think about it, but I want you to get another job. So suddenly family life is not so important to her. It's more important to her to have other things. It's not even a religious challenge. But these things happen in married life. You don't get the other job, and every night you get to hear about how stuffy it is, and how difficult it is, and how tight it is, and how if only we weren't in such dire straits, then we could afford to buy a tastier supper, and we could afford to go on vacation like everyone else this summer, and a million other things. At some point, you cave in, or you don't cave in, but you live with it. You want to see that you have shared priorities. And this you can find through stories. As you discuss with her, different things you can imagine happen in life. You don't always have to quote true stories. You can sometimes make up the stories. One of the challenges I like to give people who are dating seriously is, sit on a date, and each of you take a piece of paper. Write down on that piece of paper, what are the top five values you want to give your children? Don't discuss it with the girl. You write, she'll write. When you finish writing, I want you to write what you think the other person wrote. And then compare. Because that gives you an insight as to what your values are and what you think the other side's values are. What their values are and what they perceive your values to be. So, very often, if you ask a person, what are your values? It's very hard to say. But if I ask you, what do you want to give your kids? There are maybe five messages that can be central themes to a home. You can say, I want a home that values living in Israel. I want a home that values guests and taking in people. I want a home that values learning Torah. I would say a house is really limited to one value. But I'm willing to hear that there are five values that the parents feel they can give over. At the end of the day, I think there's only one that comes across. I find it hard to believe that parents can get it, can even get two. I'm saying there's usually one theme, you see, in the Avos. Avraham Avinu was a lot of things, but he's called Chesed. Because that was the one value, that was the prime value. It's very hard to have more than one. If you look at all our giants, they all had many, many great traits, but there was always that one that stood out as their theme. And usually that's what happens in a home too. You have many values you believe in, but then there's that one which becomes the guiding force of the home. So we're looking for shared priorities. We're looking for shared values. And as we speak, the regular conversation, if it remains on a serious level, should reveal a lot of that. You got to listen closely. The girl tells you, honesty is the most important thing. Nothing more important than honesty and trust. You can't build anything without honesty and trust. And then you tell her, what happens when you show up late to work? We had a worse story here. The girl says, well, I have a friend of mine swipe my card half hour earlier, because I don't want the boss to know I came in late.
So in theory, she knows the theories she learned about. Yeah, honesty is important, but how does she lead her life? That's where you want to discuss, where was she Shabbos? What's her family like? What does she do with her friends? What are her teachers like? You start hearing about her real life. As you hear about her real life, you start understanding what her real values are. But you have to listen. You have to get her to talk about life openly and listen. As many stories as you can get out of her. A lot of girls here in Israel like to talk about their year in Shirut Leumi, the year in national service, because that was a special year in their life. Girls, if they have nieces and nephews, usually they like talking about them. Listen. And as you listen, you start tapping in and trying to understand what's important to them. I don't believe in the question. I don't exactly know how to deal with the question. How do you envision your Shabbos table? I don't know. I don't see how a bachelor and a bachelorette really know how to envision a Shabbos table. It's nice to have all kinds of ideals and dreams, but I'd much prefer, can you describe to me which Shabbos table you value? I'd much rather hear about that. Not what her dreams are, but more like what she's seen in real life and what she values about it. There are different strengths to different homes, and you could see what she values. That'll tell you a lot about who she is and what she's aspiring for. So we're dating, and we're schmoozing, and everything seems to be going good. Do I take her to see my friends? I don't believe in it. I think you should. Your parents should meet her before you get engaged, and if not your parents, then someone who knows you really well. It is important to have an external, impartial figure meet the other side. I think it's a mistake that people make that they bring the girl home when they're already engaged or virtually engaged. I've already broken up many potential engagements, and I think they all thank me for it. Many times people get very excited, especially if they haven't had a date in a long time, or they don't get too many offers, so then they can get very excited over things that are really not good for them. And usually it's consensual. I mean, I don't think there was ever a time when I convinced one side and not the other. I mean, there are many girls out there who say thank you also, because I explained to both sides. It's, you know, there was once a girl who was very abrasive. You know, she would sit on the dates and even in front of me, she made jokes of the guy. Very tough girl. So he tried mentioning it to her, and she said she'd work on it. And he tried mentioning it again, and she said she'd work on it. And then they asked me to meet them and see how it went. So I sat with them, and I saw what was going on. So I called her up, and I said, you know, I said to them on the spot also, I said, you know, I'm not sure how this can work. You guys have differences that I don't see you bridging. And then after the date, I called her up, and I said, don't you feel like he has sensitivities which will cause you to constantly collide? I wasn't going to tell her you're abrasive, but, you know, so he has sensitivities. Doesn't matter. But if every third sentence, in his mind, she's offending him, how could you live like that? She's not going to change that. And there were a few other points, but she agreed. She agreed, he agreed. They both married someone else. There were many instances where when we met, and I spoke to both sides, and both sides said, you know what? Fine. I say, look into it. Don't take my word for it. I'll explain to you what I see and what I think you should look into. See if you really think that this can work, if you guys can bridge the gap. A person shouldn't get married out of desperation. A person sometimes reaches an age, and that depends on many factors, but there is an age where a person should compromise. Exactly how to do that should be done with the guidance of a teacher. I can't give a formula here that'll be right for all sizes, you know. Different men, different women, different stages in life. Definitely a person should compromise at certain points in life. What that means, you have to work out correctly with a teacher, with a counselor, with someone. People sometimes make mistakes in that vein. So you've reached the point where you think this is right. So ask yourself the following question. Do I miss her at the end of the date? When it comes time to get up from the date, do I wish the date could continue? Do I look forward to our next date? Do I look back fondly at our previous date? Now, sometimes you have a great date and you go on to the next date and it's a dud. Yeah, that's part of life. Almost always you have a great date and the next date you expect to be at least as good, if not better, and it won't be. Because sometimes you reach the maximum.
There does come a point in the dating where it's either you jump in or it doesn't work. Meaning there are windows of opportunity in a relationship too. Relationships can stagnate. If the relationship is right, then when it reaches the point of engagement, you have a window of opportunity. If you jump in, good. If you don't jump in, eventually the relationship starts to self-destruct, and very often it cannot be resuscitated. You have to realize that when you reach that point, you have to move in. You can take another date, you can take another two dates, you can take another three dates. But if you're going to draw it out too long, at some point, one of you or both of you will lose interest. There's only so long that you can hold on to that window of opportunity. And when you reach that point, you have to move on. If you move on, so then you've gone on to the next stage of the relationship and you can move forward. If you don't move on, it's only a matter of time before the relationship starts self-destructing. You start getting on one another's nerves because there's a tension that's unnatural there. Don't forget, here in Orthodox Judaism, we don't touch, we don't kiss, so the relationship can only go so far. You reach a point where you either move on to the next step and take a commitment that we're going towards marriage, or else the tension just destroys the relationship. That you got nowhere to go from there. You're going to tell another joke, you can have another nice date together. At some point, you get tired of one another. There's a reason why marriage involves physical touch and everything else, because that's all necessary to maintain a relationship. It all has to be there. I'm not saying an engagement you're not allowed to touch her either. The prohibition is just as hard pre-engagement to post-engagement. But at least you have that factor that now you know you're moving towards marriage. So then the engagement period is the next stage and the relationship can grow. You have to ask yourself before engagement, am I comfortable with her? Do I like her? Am I comfortable with who she is? Am I comfortable with who I am? When I'm on the date with her, do I feel like I'm myself? Or do I feel like I have to put on a show? Do I feel like she is herself when we're on the date? And the same questions go to her. Marriage is a decision you make on your own and she makes on her own. After that, you can make all decisions together. But first, you each have to decide if this is right. You have no right to make her decision for her. Meaning, if you've decided this is right, don't say, I think it's right, but I think she could do better and she should do better. She shouldn't get stuck with a lousy guy like me. I know what kind of lousy guy I am. No way such a good girl would marry me or should marry me. Now, this is something that guys do and girls do. And then they sit there on a date and say, I just want to tell you a little bit about how crazy I am. Let me just tell you a little bit. Yeah, I feel like this is all great, but I don't think you appreciate. Another guy comes and says, you know, I have certain doubts in my emunah. I'm not sure you understand that I have mornings that I wake up and I'm not sure if there is a God or isn't God. Ah, we've been discussing it throughout all the dating period. But I feel like you have to understand the gravity of the situation. So guys do this type of nonsense, guys and girls. They reach the point of engagement and then they start reopening cans of worms. Did I tell you about the girlfriend? Yeah, you told me. But did you understand how deeply I was connected to her and how I'm scarred and I'm not sure exactly? You're laughing. I see this all the time. I see this all the time. Where people are on the verge, they're on the threshold, and it's right, and they start entering self-destruct mode. They start telling the other guy, or the guy or the girl, let me explain to you why you shouldn't marry me.
Is that because they
want to
get out of the relationship?
No. I can tell you that almost every person who I worked with, who I was able to tell, believe me, she understands you. She knows you. She knows exactly what you are. I had a guy who kept telling the girl, I'm not sure if I believe. I'm not sure if I believe. And she kept telling him, I know, and I'm willing to marry you as is. Yeah, but I don't know if you understand the gravity. Eventually, he convinced her. Took him 6 months. 6 months. So it's not that she didn't, and it's not that he didn't. There are certain, what they call in Hebrew, a juke. Heard of a juke? You know what a juke is? A cockroach. The little cockroaches that enter people's heads, yeah? Okay? People sometimes have jukim. That's what they call them in Hebrew. People have problems. It's a mistake that a lot of people make. I've seen girls and guys make it. And people like to say it's as people get older. No, I've seen 19-year-old girls do the same shtuyot. I don't know how to explain where it's coming from. Because these people want to get married. And when they do get married, they're very happy. It's probably issues they have with their self-esteem.
If they're going to get married, they do get married. Hearing is they want it out of that relation, because eventually they do get married, they're very happy.
No, I'm saying they very often get married with that person. But I'll tell you, people have certain weaknesses, and I think it stems from a different place. I think it stems from a person wants to be loved and know that they're loved with their faults. And they have a hard time accepting that the other party has accepted them with their faults. So they have to keep reiterating, are you sure you understood that fault and you still love me and you still want to marry me? So I think that's where it stems from, but that's my theory. I don't know if that's true. Lemaisa, go consult the rabbi, consult the therapist. Don't do that. People do that and they destroy their lives. I've seen people break engagements that way. I've seen people not get engaged when they were on the brink of engagement and it could have happened. I have many stories like that. Okay? As I'm talking to you, I keep thinking of more and more stories like that. It's unfortunate. I don't know how to explain where it comes from. That's not the route to go. If you've been honest with her, she understands who you are, and she's been honest with you, you understand who she is. Gamarnu, you don't have to sit there and start stressing all your faults. It is advisable to make sure, as we said last time, along the way, and where to make sure we're on the same page. And when we get to engagement, it's also good to get a cue that she's holding there too. You don't want to show up and say, "Will you marry me?" She says, "Not today, dear." You don't want that, right? So you should like clue one another in. Are we ready for the next stage? Do you think we'll be there in a week or two? How you get engaged is your own business. Just remember, yichud is prohibited even more than it was before engagement. Negiah is prohibited. You're not allowed to touch her. Same halachas as before, only a little bit more stringent. And that implies post-engagement till you're married. There are different ideas of how to get engaged. When it comes time to getting engaged, then you should consult with someone who's current, not an old rabbi who's out of the picture, but someone who knows what's currently acceptable. In my day, it was acceptable that you showed up to engagement with maybe a sitter and a piece of jewelry. Today, the norms have changed. It's been over a decade, the norms have changed. You have to know what the norms are today. But you should be nice about it. Find out a nice way to get engaged. Get a nice place. And be prepared that post-engagement, everyone gets plagued with the question, did I make the right decision? And sometimes a minute after you're engaged. So be prepared for that. If you're ready to make the decision, think it through. And then get engaged and it should be with mazel. How certain do you have to be that she's the right one? So there was a man who wrote a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein and asked him. He said, I'm dating a girl and I think it's right, but I'm not 100% sure. So what I want to do is rent out two hotel rooms, one for me and one for her across the hall. And we'll live like a married couple, only we won't transgress any sins and we won't have yichud, because at the end of the day, I'll go to my room, she'll go to her room. But the rest of the day, we could live together. She'll bake the food, we'll play house. After a few days, we'll see that we can manage together, then we'll get engaged. So he asked Rav Moshe, halachically, is it permissible? Different questions about what's permissible, okay? So ordinarily, when Rav Moshe would answer a question, he'd answer exactly what was asked. He didn't go off on tangents. If you didn't ask his advice, he didn't give it. But this is one of the questions where he did go off on tangents. And he says to the guy, look, after we discussed all the halachic details of how you could make it happen, I have to tell you that when a person gets engaged, what he's really doing is he's saying, I verified this enough, and I pray to God, I have the hope that this is the one he had in mind for me. Meaning there's a certain element of hope. There's never 100%. You get engaged saying, I've done the best I could, and this seems right. Seems right is like we said. We've taken the 30 to 40 dates to verify. We see we're on the same page. We've discussed our values. We've discussed our priorities. We share. We're at least 80% concentric when it comes to our circles of our values and our aspirations. We have to have shared dreams. We have to be headed in the same direction in life. Shared priorities. And then you get engaged knowing it's not 100%. You're never going to get the 100% clarity. But this is as much clarity as it makes sense in order to get engaged. Sometimes a person says, you know, I see certain faults and I'm not blind. But right now I'm all excited. So we said, certain issues, if they're core issues, issues of a person's core personality, so then you really have to consult. It might be insurmountable. But sometimes, you know, it's not a core issue, it's not a big deal, but you still see that it's there. You say, to some people, if she's not neat, then that's going to drive them crazy. They can't live with someone who's not neat. Okay, you know that. Some people say, I'd prefer if she were neat, but I could live with it. But right now it doesn't bother me, but maybe afterwards it will bother me. A person can say, she sometimes makes sarcastic jokes. So ordinarily we get along great. But every so often she makes this like sarcastic joke, which I don't really agree with it. Is it a core part of her personality? I don't think so. If her core personality is nice and everything else is good, it's okay. Sometimes she makes those jokes. But right now it doesn't bother me so much because I'm so excited. I want to get engaged and I'm all excited about the connection with her. What will happen 2-3 years down the road? Things that are not core issues, then your job is to build the relationship. And as you build the relationship, you will love her more and the relationship will grow. And the Pasuk tells us, Al kol pesha'im techaseh ahava. Love has a way of covering over everything. But you have to develop love. You have to work on love. Love doesn't come naturally. The infatuation, pre-engagement, that comes easily. There's a lot of excitement and hope. It's all theoretical. Then the day after marriage, you suddenly realize, hey, wait a second. This isn't what I thought it was all about. Now all the makeup's off. Now the morning after. Now how do we make this work? That's when the work starts. The morning after the wedding. If you've entered marriage, then you've entered with the realization that as good as it seems, the morning after marriage we start working. It's as good as it seems. Every couple has to work. And for that, I refer you to our Binyan HaBayit classes. Laila Tov.